Welcome to Inside Analog Photo. I'm your host, Scott Shepard. The Inside Analog Photo radio program is all about the traditional photographic process. We talk about all aspects of analog photography, including the hybrid workflow. You can find out more information over at www.insideanalogphoto.com. And of course, Inside Analog Photo is brought to you by Fujifilm, making life more colorful. These guys have the coolest instant photography materials known to mankind. They have, of course, the pack film in 3.25 by 4.25 and 4x5, color and black and white. They have the Instax systems in the wide format, the Instax 210 camera and film, and of course the Instax Mini in the Instax Mini 7 and the Instax Mini 25, both in color film. Beautiful stuff. There's nothing cooler than instant photography. You get a print, because if you don't have a print, you don't have a real photograph. This is great fun stuff. This is great for art. This is great for business. This is cool stuff. You definitely want to check them out over at www.fujifilmusa.com/professional, making life more colorful. Our friends over at Photo Publicist, providing worldwide publicity, strategic promotion, social media marketing, and business development for the photographer, turning photographers into celebrities. You can find out more information over at www.photopublicist.com. Our friends at Richard Photo Lab for the highest quality work known to mankind anywhere on this planet. Unbelievable developing, scanning, and of course, output on high quality Fuji Crystal Archive. Unbelievable cool stuff these guys are up to. And remember, you don't have a photograph unless you have a print in your hand, and you need to print your pictures. This is important. You need to supply proofs to your customers and even print your own work, because it's not about looking at it on a monitor. It's about holding a print in your hand. Definitely check these guys out at Richard Photo Lab, of course, at richardphotolab.com. Our friends over at DR5. DR5 Chrome Black and White Developing, that turns your black and white neg into, that's right, black and white chrome. Unbelievable stuff. www.dr5.com. Our friends over at Upstrap at upstrap-pro.com. For the camera strap that will not slip off your shoulder, guaranteed bar none, the coolest strap around. Our friends at Iger Studios for the finest quality drum scans known to mankind, IgerStudios.com. Our official media partner, APUG, the Analog Photography User Group, for all things traditional photographic process on the web, www.apug.org. And our official philanthropic partner, George Eastman House International Museum of Photography and Film, over at www.eastmanhouse.org. Today on Inside Analog Photo, we're going to be here with Aline Smithson. Aline is a fine art photographer, a photography evangelist. She runs an incredible blog called Lens Scratch. She features the most incredible work from photographers all around the globe. She does consulting, she does workshops, and of course, we're going to talk to Aline today about her beautiful photography. She does really cool black and white silver gelatin prints, hand colored. Her art's been displayed worldwide. She's been published in many, many magazines. But you know, one thing we're going to talk today about is really about the whole fine art market. She does consultation on fine art and fine artists and what they need to get published and get into galleries. And I think you're going to find this very, very enlightening. It's a good dose of reality. And Aline really has a handle and a grip on this. So I really do urge people to go look at her work. Look at her website. Look at the blog, Lens Scratch. Unbelievable. Just Google it, Lens Scratch. It's unbelievable. She puts in so much time with this. And really, hire her as a consultant. Figure out how to get your work to the next level. You might be shooting weddings every day. You might be doing work for the newspaper. You might be shooting kids, dogs, pets, reptiles. Lordy have mercy knows. But Aline can really help you take it to the next level. Look at your work objectively. Spend a few C-notes and have this stuff looked at and learn. This is an incredible opportunity that, you know, this would take you decades to figure out. She was a photo editor. You will hear what's up with Aline. And when you're done, you're going to be like, whoa, where have I been missing this gig at? So, you know, you need to look at her work. It's fabulous. She's a great photographer. She's a great photo editor. She's a great evangelist for analog photography. You know, Aline is really cool, and you're going to dig this. Aline, how you doing today?
I'm doing excellent, thank you. It's great to hear your voice again.
Thank you so much for joining us here on Inside Analog Photo. Great to have you on the program, Aline.
Well, great to be speaking to a community that I highly respect and am part of.
Yeah, this is fabulous. So why don't you tell us about yourself if people haven't seen your work or been to your website or blog? Let's talk about Aline for a moment.
Okay. I would call photography my third career. I started out as a painter and moved to New York to become an artist or be an artist, and became very disenchanted with that world and trying to make it as an artist in New York City, and fell into my other passion, which was fashion, and became a fashion editor for Vogue Patterns and Vogue Knitting magazines, and for a decade traveled all over the world with amazing fashion photographers like Mario Testino and Patrick de Marchelier and even Horst. And then ended up getting married and having children and trying to figure out my next career when I started taking pictures. Realized that this was a passion and I have never looked back. I live in Los Angeles, and for the last 10 years I've been teaching at the Julia Dean Photo Workshops. I'm sort of the fine art wing there. I still only shoot film. I use a twin lens Rolleiflex and a Hasselblad, and I use toy cameras. My work tends to be a little bit more conceptual, and that probably came from the fact that I was home with small children and not able to travel and make that kind of work, and I had to really create work in my own head and produce it within a short period of time when kids were napping. It sort of set the tone for the way I work. I now write a blog called Lens Scratch that is read worldwide and keeping busy. That's a little bit about me.
It's a lot, because I can't believe that you're actually able to still pull off doing photography. You can find time to teach people and consult, and on top of that, run Lens Scratch. That's over the top.
Well, I really do this 24/7. I think my husband would love me to slow down, but I'm so passionate about this world and so passionate about helping other photographers navigate the fine art waters. There's nothing more rewarding to me to see someone else's successes. So it's a terrific community to be part of.
I think it is, and I think that it's changing and it's molding and it's doing weird stuff. In a little bit here, we can talk about that, but I really want to go into your photography. So you've done a bunch of different bodies of work. You did a fabulous series with your mom that was just very, very cool.
Oh, thank you. Yes, that was all shot with a Hasselblad, and then I cropped the images in the darkroom, and then they're all hand-painted. So every time I sell one, I have to repaint it. But that's all right, because it gives me time thinking about my mom and thinking about that experience, because she passed away shortly after I finished the series.
And I think that's what's so cool about this whole series, is each one of these prints is hand-painted, and everyone's probably a little bit different.
Right.
It's a piece of art. I mean, it's not a photograph that you've been able to just say, oh, well, order 50, click.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I would love someone to order 50, but I'll be very busy for a while painting away. It was a series, actually, that combined all the things that I love, which I love to paint, I love to go thrift store shopping, I love photo styling, and then I love photography, and I love my mom. So it was a really wonderful collaboration and so fun to look for all the props and put it all together. And another thing I'm really proud of with that series is that it has a sense of humor. And there's so little work out in the fine art world that's funny. I hope I can make another series that taps people's funny bones.
A lot of your work is very funny. I'm digging the one, and I don't remember if it was the whole series or not, but you have a picture of, what was this little doll, this little bald dude?
Oh, well, that's a series, actually, I'm in the process of trying to create a book from.
Well, that's right. It's Hugo.
It's Hugo. Well, I had been shooting Hugo for about 2 years because I find him absolutely fascinating. He's totally bizarre looking. He doesn't fit really in with other toys. He doesn't really fit anywhere. So as I was shooting this, I started remembering this childhood book that I was drawn to called The Lonely Doll. And it was all black and white photos of an adventure of a doll. And I looked at that as a kid. That really was my favorite book. So I decided to create this work, and ultimately it would be a children's book for adults, because he does get a little racy in it. By trying to figure out who he is, he bumps up against a lot of other dolls and other things, trying to find his place in the world. But anyway, it's a fun series, and I've been shooting it for about 5 years.
No, I think it's great, and it's cool. It's just like you said, Hugo's a freak, but there's more behind these pictures than just the doll. There's a deeper sense to every one.
Right. Well, there's a humanity there, and I really do see him as sort of representing part of all of us that feels like we don't quite fit in and trying to figure out our place in the world.
Right, because Hugo doesn't have any legs, right?
Right. So I'm always trying to disguise the fact that he's just a trunk.
Right. What a weird toy to make for someone. But it's great. I mean, how could you replicate this? I can't think of another piece of Americana that you could use.
Yeah,
that would be this cool.
I know. He's unique, that's for sure.
It is great. And I think it's very cool, like you said, to see humor in work and have it to be fine arts. So why don't we do this? First, people should go to your website, even while they're listening this, to alenesmithson.com. And they should look at your work and just see what we're talking about. Maybe you can help us because you're doing workshops and you're teaching people these things, especially with lens scratch. Why don't you give me your explanation of what fine art is? Everybody puts this label on fine art. People are labeling wedding photography as fine art. Maybe it is.
Right.
I don't know. People label food photography. Everybody's got this fine art rubber stamp now, and they put it on everything, and it's fine art. And I guess they think, well, if I sell a picture, it must be fine art. And I don't really think that's the case.
Well, things have really radically changed, and I'm pretty sure it's with the advent of digital imagery. When I first started out, this was pre-digital or early on in digital, people considered fine art to really be silver gelatin prints that were carefully constructed, carefully printed. You approach your work very thoughtfully, very artistically. Now, actually, it's harder and harder to place that kind of work. The idea of creating a beautiful single image is really almost dead in the water. The kind of work now that curators and galleries and publications and editors are looking for are really works that tell stories. And the idea of working in a project is kind of new to a lot of photographers, but what really is being required is that you become almost as good a writer about your work as you are a photographer. And the fine art world is looking for projects that have a strong voice and usually come from a personal place. You're out in the world, you're showing imagery, and why are you doing that? What are you trying to tell us with your work? Sometimes what happens with that kind of work is that the images may not be as strong and beautiful as sort of the past fine art images. But there's a reason why people are making them, and it also gives a curator a lot to talk about. That's why it is so important that photographers become good writers, because curators and editors want to write about your work, and they want to know why you've made that work and what you're trying to say with it. The day of making beautiful images of trees, it's getting harder and harder to get that work into the fine art market, sort of on a larger scale. I mean, certainly there are plenty of galleries that still look for that kind of work. But now with the internet and so much online sharing of imagery, the thought behind the work is just as important as the work.
No, exactly. And I think you're right when you're talking about making that single image. So I think the pretty picture of Yosemite or something that you would consider fine art doesn't cut it anymore.
Well, I have many students that come in that are really technically incredible photographers that capture nature. They take photo trips and they come back with wonderful images. The problem with that kind of work is that it's not unique. And you've seen a Vermont barn. You've seen one. You've pretty much seen them all. I mean, especially well executed. So what is it about that barn that you want to show us that no one else has shown us? And I don't mean the beautiful texture of the barn. I'm talking more about the context of the barn in the next town. What does that look like in comparison to this barn? And when were they built? So a lot of backstory is much more important now. And I don't really know why that changed. I do have a feeling that in the last 10 years, the art school's MFA programs have now a total focus on photography. Where in the past you got an MFA in art, you had to do printmaking and painting and photography. You had to know all of those areas of the art world. Now they have specific MFA programs for photography. And a lot of that programming is very intellectual. It's a lot about thinking about why you're making work and the work in context to other things. It's not so much about the single image or capturing something beautiful. It's more significant work. And I really think that has had a huge impact on the photo world. And so we're looking at photography differently now.
Do you think it's because of this consolidated education that people have no background in art history?
No, well, they do have a background in art history because they should be taking art history classes as part of an MFA program. But I think what they've done is they've intellectualized what's in front of them to a level that it's no longer something that is something desirable to look at for long periods of time. I mean, a lot of work that sells, I mean, someone will kill me for this, but it's usually very benign work. It's work that doesn't challenge you, that you can kind of dreamily look at, which is something usually in nature or a landscape. And work that someone wants to publish in a magazine and talk about isn't necessarily that kind of work. It's almost like there are now several different areas of making photography, and some lend themselves to certain outlets better than others.
So, I mean, really, do you think that if you want to sell prints and make money, that it's the postcardish poster type hotel room artwork that's selling? Or do you have to go for the intellectual, heavy art concept where there's a message to it? And if you don't have the message, then you're just selling out to the man.
Well, first of all, I don't think anyone is selling much work these days, to be perfectly honest. I mean, I'm sure there's a handful of photographers that sell well, but I think nowadays we have to look at photography as a passion, and that is not where we produce an income. I mean, every photographer I know has a second job. They do something else. But there are different arenas. The smaller galleries that lend themselves to a small collector base may still really gravitate towards traditional black and white imagery. But then the people that create huge color prints, that's like something that they might sell to a museum. So there are really different arenas for different work. But I do think that it's very hard for someone that makes large color prints to get into a little mom-and-pop gallery. Someone who is making smaller prints that go into homes easily might get into those galleries. And then I do have an opinion on sales. Nowadays, you have to almost sell out half a show to break even, because now most photographers usually have to pay for the framing and the shipping to shows. So that is a huge financial commitment, and I know very few people that sell out half a show. They might sell two or three pieces. So you kind of have to steel yourself for the economy that we're in right now.
Well, I mean, really, anymore, if you want to do a show, aren't you better off just renting your own retail space for a month or two and throw your photo up and say, I got a show?
No, because honestly, you will be only drawing your friends into that environment. I mean, that's one thing that a gallery does for you, especially a gallery that's been around for a while. It does have a pool of collectors. It does try to market you. It tries to bring in buyers for your work that you don't have access to. So the idea of renting out a space and showing up work is great for a party. It's great for your friends to see their work. But ultimately, you're probably not going to sell that much work doing that, in my humble opinion.
Sure. So let's talk about your work and what you're doing these days. What are you doing that's making you happy? I mean, are you working towards, I know I can do this work so someone will buy it or put it in the show or it'll be in a magazine? Or do you continue to shoot what you want to do to make yourself happy?
I definitely shoot what I want to do to make myself happy. And ironically, I find that when I do that, I get an article written about me. I have very low expectations for my success in the world, but I work really, really hard. I work hard at marketing my work. I work hard at getting my work out there. I work hard at establishing and maintaining relationships with people in the fine art world. I believe in goodwill. I expose a lot of other photographers through my blog to the world. And I feel like putting out all that energy, things will happen for you eventually, especially if you are true to who you are and the kind of work you want to make. So it really doesn't boil down to just making the work. There are so many other layers and levels of things to engage yourself in this community. I mean, I've started being a reviewer at Portfolio Reviews. And one thing that I have noticed is that some photographers are very myopic in the sense that it's all about them and their work. And they don't really understand yet that it's about all of us And the more we celebrate and expose each other's work to the world, the more our work gets out there. I mean, one thing that's been amazing is that many wonderful things, including being in exhibitions and being published, have come from my relationships with other photographers. So I truly think that being someone that's open and has a really strong sense of goodwill to the community, things will eventually happen for you.
So I think really, unless you're really making a living as a wedding portrait photographer, editorial, or where it's a normal type of deal, to really be able to have realistic expectations as a fine art photographer, then you really need to go find a job.
Absolutely correct.
Really, you need to do this for a passion. It's not that I'm going to go out and get myself this new cool gear and go shoot some pretty pictures out at the coast, and I'm going to start making money so I can pay rent. Not going to happen.
I've had students come in and say, I was just laid off, so I'm here now to figure out how I can make money as a fine art photographer. And that's really crushing to say, well, none of us are making any money. We all have to figure out another way to bring in work. And there's certainly ways to do that as photographers. I mean, you can have a commercial business on the side. I also have a stock agency. I have a rep that puts my work in movie sets and TV show sets. There's just other ways of trying to generate income through your photography, because it's very hard to do that as a fine art photographer.
Do you think, Aline, that if you dilute yourself as a fine art photographer, and let's say you do weddings and a portrait or families or kids or food, do you think that if you do other types of activity, because the way the web is now and everything's sort of linked together, that if you dilute yourself by doing these other things, that in the art world, you're not a fine art photographer anymore?
Oh, no. I mean, I'm really forgiving because we all have to make a living. But I do believe that if you're going to produce fine art and have it in galleries and you really want to be taken seriously, that you have a separate website for that work and you have a separate website for your commercial or your other businesses and you break them apart. I certainly spent years photographing families and children, and the one rule of thumb that I gave me for each shoot was that I made myself create something for myself at the shoot. Maybe when it was over, I then asked the kids to pose in a way that was much more fine art, so that I left the experience having had some kind of creative input to it, other than just the composition and all of that. So that's kind of how I got through doing that work. But I would never have put any of that work on my website.
Right, because once you post something or you put it on your blog, it's there forever. You cannot remove
it.
No matter what you want to do, you can take your website down, but somewhere someone's got it cached, and it's going to rear its ugly little head when you don't want it to. Right?
All those early nudes that I posed for, just teasing.
So let's talk about this opportunity that you have with doing these workshops. And even more so, I think that's even maybe more important, is the private consultation that you're doing. But with the amount of content and people you deal with LensScratch and your own work, and you've been shown all over the world and published in lots of great publications, I mean, you sort of have this insight that people don't have or they can get, but boy, it takes a lot of money and a lot of time.
Well, that's exactly why I started teaching classes at the Julia Dean Photo Workshops in Los Angeles. For emerging photographers, really teaching them how to take their work to the next step and explaining how the fine art market works. And I started it because I did not come out of academia. I had very little photo education. And when I wanted to start submitting my work or showing my work, I really was in a vacuum. I didn't have any community to find anything out about how it worked. So I just decided that after gaining all this experience, it was a shame not to share it. And the funny thing is that oftentimes my students are applying to the same shows that I'm submitting to, and they will get in and I won't. But that's just the way it goes. But I do really enjoy helping photographers shape the work they're making and figure out where they want to submit it to and where they want their work to go. That's been incredibly satisfying. I've also started doing private tutoring, and I have a number of people that I tutor via Skype. I have someone in Uruguay and Germany and Canada and many around the United States. that just sort of plug in for a session when they need to sort of refocus their work and get re-energized and figure out what they want to do with their work. And then I may not talk to them for 6 months, or I may talk to them every 2 weeks. So it all depends on the person.
So how do these work? I mean, I think probably unless you live in Southern California, you're going to have to travel and stay to go to one of the Julia Dean gigs.
Yeah, and that actually is geared over a number of weeks, but you have to live in the LA area. I do have someone that drives up from San Diego and sleeps overnight to take the class. Tutoring, usually I talk to someone for an hour, and that's how we work it.
So I guess really, Aileen, people should at minimum contact you if they want to get some insight into this. How's this work?
Well, in general, without me in the picture at all, there are many portfolio reviews that happen around the country. The problem with those is that they're incredibly expensive and competitive. And I firmly believe in that portfolio review process. It is the only art form that has it. They don't have that in the painting world or the print world. It's really unique to photography, and it's a truly amazing thing. I'm just going to sideline here and describe, especially for people that don't come out of academia and don't have a support system, to be able to go into a room and spend 2 or 3 days meeting with curators and publishers and editors and gallery owners, and to get your work on their visual Rolodex, on their visual wavelength, is huge. But if you go and you're not prepared, you've really wasted your money. Your prints have to be perfect because a gallerist is looking at the print. The print is what you sell. The image is not what you sell. It's the print. So your prints, your presentation, your ability to talk about your work, all of those things are really vital to having a successful portfolio review. And in my classes, this is really what I prepare students for, about being able to make an appointment with a gallery and walk in with a set of prints and a project that someone really is going to be interested in and feel like the stuff that they look at is really of a high quality.
Let's sugarcoat this for a minute. So, I mean, really, if you put your stuff together, so let's say you print out some beautiful prints on your Epson whatever with your exhibition fiber paper and everything looks pretty and it's nice, don't you think somebody should get some private consultation before they go in? I mean, the work might be fabulous, right? It could just be the best thing since sliced bread. But I think a lot of times when people go to portfolio reviews, that they're not set up for what's going to be told to them.
Right. To have someone to be able to talk about their work, that's key. And then the other thing is to really understand why you're there and what you want out of that review. Unfortunately, I've had people come and drop a box in front of me and just stand there and not really understand. They basically want praise for their work, but they haven't really thought the whole process through. Why are they there? What are they trying to say? Are they willing to spend the next 5 years promoting this body of work? Is it strong enough to do that? That kind of thing.
I've been to some portfolio reviews, and I think that if you're lucky, people will give you an honest opinion. I think a lot of people at portfolio reviews, sometimes, depending on who they're talking to, might not give a dose of reality. That's why I'm thinking that it might be better to have you and people like yourself look at some work that can give you some honest opinion and maybe work into some reality before you get slapped upside the head with it.
Well, I have to say that I'm a really, really kind person, and I look for value in everyone's work. So I'm not the kind of person that devastates people, but I gently try to guide them to see things perhaps differently or present work in a different way. I mean, that's a great idea. There's not a lot of people out there doing that. I guess various instructors would be happy to help students with that.
Even that, I mean, I've been to other conferences, photography stuff, where they offer this portfolio view with their instructors at the conference. They're not too frank. I mean, it's all sugar-coated.
Yeah, but I went to art school, so I know what it feels like to be devastated by someone. And actually, you don't make work for a long time after that.
Is it good or bad, though? I mean, really, let's talk about this in the progression of a photographer and your work and to do better work and to try to get on track. Is it all that matters to a photographer, especially since you're not making any money? And you're probably not going to make much unless you have a gallery in Las Vegas at Caesars and you're selling $5,000 prints?
That's correct, yeah.
And that's a different discussion altogether. So really, shouldn't you just be happy with what you're doing? Should it really matter what other photographers say about your work?
If you are that kind of person, but most of us seek out approval from someone else. And we, of course, want to seek out approval from our peers. So there's very few photographers that work in a vacuum that just make work and don't want to get it out into the world. I mean, there just is something instinctual. You're making something, you want to get it seen by a broader audience.
It's human nature, right? Don't you want to be praised and everybody wants to say that was great, you did a beautiful job.
Right. We all need our trophies.
Right. That's why I'm thinking that having someone like you look at your work and then maybe gingerly explain reality is going to help people more. You've seen these TV shows, right? They have the next fine artist that was on Bravo. Some of those people were straight up, dude, that is garbage. People are like, whoa. But is that what you need? Do you really need to get whacked upside the head to get you straight? Or is that going to put some people in the tailspin where they're going to just go run and hide?
Well, I personally believe the latter. There's ways of encouraging people and helping them see, and I certainly experienced it as a teacher. Eventually, hopefully, they will begin to get more perspective on their work. For instance, I reviewed someone last year, and the work was not that strong. But I really tried to help this photographer, gave them ideas of what they could do with the work. And she ended up taking my class after the review, created a whole new body of work that was much more personal, that had nothing to do with what she had produced, and just went through a very successful portfolio review. And she looked at me and she goes, I just looked at my old work. And was it really as bad as I think it is now? But see, it's taken her a year of growing as a photographer now to see the work with a different perspective. And that's really what it takes. I mean, part of it is looking at other people's work and trying to decipher why is that work successful? And what are they saying with their work? Unfortunately, a lot of photographers do become myopic and they don't really see the broader picture.
Let's look at this scenario. So what if you're a photographer and you keep processing and you're doing your work and it's black and white or color or chrome or whatever you're shooting? Even let's say you're a Polaroid Fuji junkie. You're making the one-off. You can't Photoshop it. That's it. But if you look at your work and you're like, ah, that sucks. And everybody else around you keeps saying, wow, that's cool. Who do you believe? Yourself or everybody else that's blowing smoke somewhere? Or maybe they're not blowing smoke and you have such a high level of where you're trying to compare your work to that maybe your stuff isn't as bad as you think and it is good, but you think it's bad.
This is the interesting waters that all artists navigate because art is subjective. And I think some people do understand that their friends are always going to compliment their work and that maybe what they need to hear from are other photographers. But it's very hard to be critical to your peers because you want to stay friends with them.
Point is, you need to go to an outside source, a third party that doesn't even know you. You're just off the street, and I'm going to tell you good or bad.
Yeah, that helps.
But I think people, they spend all this money on cameras and processing or however they're shooting. They have their hopes, and this is so great, and they spend so much time. And then have someone come by and just whack them off at the knees.
Very hard to recover and have confidence in your work after that. That's why I don't believe in devastating anyone. Because I think that people bloom and flourish when they're encouraged. But you have to encourage them in a way that they understand that they have a long way to go. But you're still encouraging that possibility. It is a fine line to walk, but that's just my philosophy in teaching. I think that in some ways it's worse to think that you are fantastic and other people may have rejected your work, but you still think you're fantastic. And with that attitude, you're not really allowing the possibility for growth because you've blocked out the ability to listen to anyone else.
Right. And I think people get trapped in their own reality distortion field.
Right.
And then sometimes you need to be set straight. That's why it's not very often when you can see someone with your background that's offering to help people. And really for what the price is a very low monetary compensation for what they can learn, even with just spending an hour or two with you.
Well, I would hope that that's a true statement.
I think so. So maybe we're both in our own reality distortion field, but I think it's fabulous.
I do think that we are all unique. We all have amazing stories to tell. And if we can figure out ways to do that, there's more humanity in the world. So I'm a big supporter of photographers.
Let's go back to your work for a moment here. What are you working on now that's keeping you enthused, inspired, that's making you happy?
Well, I actually have a couple of series in my head that I haven't had any time to work on, so that's frustrating. I have another series that I just finished that I am not completely sold on yet, so I haven't put it on my website. I haven't thought through. I feel like it needs more tweaking. And then, as I said, I'm really, really trying to get a couple of book projects done. They're so labor intensive because now you have to do all the things that a book marketer would have done for you. You have to write the proposal. You have to research to see where your book fits into the world and what other books are like it. Then you have to talk about that and you have to create all these PDFs. And then still with the book world, very few publishers will publish a book without financial help from the photographer. What I'm hearing on the street is that many publishers are asking photographers for $30,000 to publish a book.
Well, I mean, at that point, aren't you just better off going to Blurb and making your own? Or it's because of the whole distribution thing?
It's the distribution.
It's not a real book then.
Right, exactly. I mean, Blurb and many of the other publishers, definitely, it's a wonderful thing for photographers. And it probably has also grown because, again, the advent of digital and so many people making images. And unlike us analog shooters that at the end of the day will have our film, the digital shooters really need to get that work out and maybe put into books so that they have some tangible and tactile thing to carry it into the next generation. But I guess I was surprised at how really truly difficult it is to get a book published by traditional means.
So we have these self-publishing gigs that basically they're like you said, you can make a book, it's pretty, they look great, but they're not going to be at Barnes & Nobles, they're not going to be in Borders. I mean, you can get them on Amazon, but there's still a perception with it and it's not really dubbed real, right?
Correct.
So what's your thoughts on having a portfolio on your iPad? I mean, do you still have to do good prints? You still have to do certain things, or is gallery people and people that are in the true art deal, do they take this as any validity, or when you come in with something like this, this is just a toy? What are you doing?
Okay, I mean, really think about it from their point of view. They are putting work on the wall. They are selling a product. This is true for curators and for gallerists. They don't want to see the work on an iPad. They really want to see the actual print, because this is something that I've heard from a number of gallerists. That now so many of these exhibitions, the calls for entry, almost all of them, are through digital files. You upload your JPEGs to a site, you pay your $35, you get in the show, you print the piece, you frame the piece, you ship it off to the gallery, and it shows up, and the gallerist is mortified by the quality of the print because they haven't seen it ahead of time. So there is your opportunity as a photographer to maybe get that gallery interested in you as a gallery artist, and they see this poorly printed piece, poorly matted piece, and they go, well, I can't represent someone like that. So the iPad is great for sharing work with other photographers, but you cannot bring your laptop or an iPad into a portfolio review because they're looking for the print. I mean, maybe a magazine editor would be fine with that because they're looking at things online.
I think anymore, a lot of analog photographers, they shoot their lovely yummy film, they send it off to the lab, the lab gives them a scan, they download it via FTP, and that's as far as it goes. And photography is about the print, right?
Exactly.
I mean, you don't have a photograph until you have a print in your hand. You have an image, you have something online, it's not a photograph.
Right.
And I think the whole skill set and the art of printing is being dissolved.
I completely agree with you. Two of the biggest complaints that I hear from people over and over is that photographers are oversaturating their work. They're changing the colors, and galleries, they just don't want that unless it's really off and you're doing it on purpose. And the other thing is over-sharpening. And basically, they want it to look as if it was shot on film and printed in a non-digital way. So there are some real drawbacks to people's printing abilities. It is really hard now navigating so many different areas of photography in terms of We have to learn how to scan. We have to learn Photoshop. We have to learn how to print digitally. We print in the darkroom. There's so many different things to learn how to do well that it's really hard.
So do you think that putting together a portfolio and trying to put together a body of work that you're best off going to a custom printer? And I guess part of this would even get into print competitions, and I'm sure you've set through print competitions and judging is you have a certain amount of the photograph, but a certain amount is the way it's displayed, the way it's matted, the way the print looks. Should I print all my stuff on Cibachrome? Should I be shooting chrome and printing Cibachromes? Does it have to be black and white? Does it have to be NF surface paper? Should it be a fine art rag? Should it be what? There's the question, I guess. Does sort of the print go along with the work? Or is there something that people are more likely to like better because of the material that it's printed on and what it is?
Well, I do think that galleries are really wanting photographers to know their stuff and to have an opinion and a point of view. They want a photographer to come in and say, I print on this paper because. And assuming that that photographer has tried out 20 different kinds of paper and come to the conclusion that this is the best.
So really, it comes back to the thing is you need to know what you're doing.
Right. I do think that there are a number of photographers that will let a lab print their work, especially the larger sizes. But most photographers that I know print their own work, either in the darkroom or at home or in their studio. So it is really hard. And I think part of this whole process is just making really smart decisions and working hard at it and figuring it out.
Well, and I'm not trying to do this as an advertisement, but I keep going back to the opportunities. If somebody can talk to yourself, I mean, really to get this kind of insight, and the only way to find it is to spend a lot of money and waste a lot of time.
Well, there are less expensive portfolio reviews out there. I mean, there are more and more portfolio reviews all the time. There's a lot in California. Coming up is the Palm Springs Photo Festival. I'm going up in April to a 4-day portfolio review in Portland, Photo Lucida. But now Atlanta has portfolio reviews every year. New Orleans does. Certainly New York, Chicago. So might have to drive a little bit, but there are lots of venues now. And it's a great thing at least to try once with your work and sort of see where it lands. And you learn a lot.
So let's talk about your work, where they can see what you're doing, exhibitions, gallery showings. Where can they see your beautiful photography? Because it is fabulous. I mean, if you go through your stuff and look at it, it's very cool.
Oh, well, thank you. I will have a lot of work in a number of shows in Los Angeles in the month of April. April is the month of photography in Los Angeles. And I think it's backed by the Lucy Foundation, who does the International Photography Awards and the PX3 Awards. They're hoping to get photography into a myriad of venues in Los Angeles. This is the third year they've done it, and it grows every year. I'll be having a solo show at Wall Space Gallery in Santa Barbara in September. And I had the wonderful fortune of having many magazine articles published this fall, including Rangefinder, that showcase my work. I think in the month of October, I had 5 features in magazines all over the world, including the only photography magazine in the Middle East. So that was wonderful.
See, look what happened. They saw your work, and look what's going on now in Egypt. It was Hugo. You set him off.
Exactly. So I try to submit to competitions and submit to magazines, and you just have to be a marketer.
Do you find time to go shoot? Or do you have enough stuff now that you can sort of selectively pick things and say, well, I have so much stuff now and so many different portfolios that I don't need to go shoot for a few weeks?
I don't shoot as much as I used to. I do tend to shoot a lot on vacations, and then I'll really miss it and shoot a couple of rolls. And then if I'm working on a project, of course, I'm shooting pretty consistently for that. Most of my projects span over a year or two, so it doesn't mean that I'm shooting every day. It usually means I'm shooting every couple of weeks. But it's definitely harder and harder to find time to make work. And the other problem is that I do have a lot of work, and I haven't marketed it enough to get it all out there. So I'm now revisiting older work and trying to bring that forward. So it's good. I mean, that means I don't have to shoot all the time, but the marketing does get a little exhausting.
That's another point, too, is to do photography no matter what you're doing. The business marketing part is 75-80% of it.
That's correct. Yeah, I mean, people forget that it takes a second to snap the photo, and it takes years to push that photo out into the world till it finds the right home.
Yeah, it's a lot different than just shooting crazy and just posting stuff on Flickr, so.
Yeah.
Workshops. You said you have the series with Julia Deans. So let's talk about if you're in the Southern California basin from, I guess, Santa Barbara to San Diego, they can come see you live.
Yes, and I teach a Next Step 1 class, and then I teach a Next Step 2 class where we actually put on an exhibition and everyone learns how to prepare for a show and write a press release and do press lists and hang work and all that part of having a show. I then have a class that meets once a month for people that are just working on portfolios as a place to touch in and get feedback on their work and have a photography community. I also host a lecture series in the spring for significant image makers that live in Southern California. And I teach toy camera classes. And then in the fall, I teach a class called Finding Your Vision. It's for people who are technically good photographers but haven't figured out what they want to shoot. And it's a visually exhausting class where we just look at tons and tons of genres of photography and try them out each week, try different things. And usually it sparks ideas for people and gets them shooting in ways they never thought they would be shooting in. That's about it for now. I'm always thinking of new things to try and teach.
And one last thing that I keep pressing upon, but it's the opportunity of a lifetime, is to have some one-on-one time with you. So let's talk about how that would work. Who do they call? How do they email you? What do they do? How do they get this process started? Because really, in the long run, you're going to save a lot of time and a lot of money if they talk to yourself about fine art and your work and what you're doing to get you on the right track.
Well, Scott, I am very grateful to you, and I certainly hope I live up to your opinion. But people can find me on my website or my blog. There's an email address, and they can just shoot me an email and tell me what they're looking for, and I can go over details with them.
Yeah, I think this is great. And Aline, I really appreciate you joining us. I think people, they have to go to your blog. You need to go. I mean, it's almost a daily thing. You have to go to LensScratch. And how do you get to that? LensScratch.com?
It's lensscratch.blogspot.com, and there's only one S, L-E-N-S-C-R-A-T-C-H. I have thousands of readers all over the globe, and I'm happy to say that things have happened for photographers that have been on the site. I recently featured someone who had never had their work on the internet before, and from the blog post just had their work featured in Russian Esquire magazine. So you never know who is looking at your work with these blogs, because it is now truly an international marketplace. So that's pretty exciting.
So very true. And like we said, I think this is a daily reading requirement, because you're doing in-depth interviews, you're featuring all these different photographers' work. It's just great to see what people are doing. I mean, you don't need to look at photography to create your own. That's great. But I think it's still important to look and see what people are doing and what's current and what people like. I think you need to put a donate or something up on this blog, because there's nothing. Someone needs to compensate you for all this work. I mean, really, it's such a resource to photographers that you should put a little PayPal donate button up.
Well, I may take you up on that.
I would. I mean, you'd be surprised. Think, you have 30,000 people literally reading this blog pretty much every day, right?
Yeah.
Think if you got a dollar from each person. A dollar would be nothing. Sounds pretty tasty to me. It's a lot better than
Starbucks, I think.
By far. And really, again, your photography is over the top. It's fabulous work. I mean, it's obvious. You're published in tons of magazines and all these shows. And to take all this time and do all the work with LensScratch, it really is cool. I appreciate it. And the work you're doing for the whole photographic community is fabulous, Aline.
It's beautiful. Thank you so much, Scott. Same to you.
Well, thank you so much. And I think really we look forward to having you back to talk about these different topics and more of your work and shooting with intent for fine art. And there's a lot of topics that we can go into that I think we can explore at a later date. So we definitely look forward to having you back on the program, and you have an open invitation anytime you'd like to talk.
Oh, thank you so much.
Aline, thank you. I really appreciate it, and we look forward to talking soon.
Okay.
Well, there you go. Aline Smithson. I told you, unbelievable conversation. Reality is harsh, but there's a lot of great stuff going on here, and you can grab this bull by the horns and deal with it. And I think using Aline as a helper, as a consultant, you know, if you're in the Los Angeles basin, Southern California, you can take her workshops with Julia Dean and learn a lot of stuff. But really, she can help you worldwide. Skype, iChat, whatever, the telephone, you can fly to LA and meet her. You can do whatever you need to, but you know, she can really objectively look at your work and help you. I really urge you to look at her photography. Take some inspiration. Look at Hugo. I'm telling you, Aline rocks, literally. Her blog, Lens Scratch, unbelievable stuff. Really look at her stuff. Be objective and look at it. She can help you guys out. I think she helped you already for what you just learned today. We're going to have her back on the program many more times. Just a great, great friend of the photography world. The Inside Analog Photo Radio Program has been brought to you by Fujifilm for their full line of instant cameras and film, and of course, fine quality Fuji Crystal Archive paper over at www.fujifilmusa.com/professional. Our friends at Photo Publicist, worldwide publicity, strategic promotion, social media marketing, and business development over at www.photopublicist.com. Our friends at Richard Photo Lab for the finest quality lab in the country, richardphotolab.com. Our friends over at DR5 for black and white chrome at dr5.com. Upstrap for the finest quality camera strap that will not slide off your shoulder at upstrap-pro.com. Our friends over at Iger Studios at igerstudios.com. And of course, our media partners of the Analog Photography User Group at apug.org. And our official philanthropic partner, George Eastman House, over at eastmanhouse.org. I've been your host, Scott Shippard, here on Inside Analog Photo. We'll be back next week with more great analog photography.